Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne. You are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. Residue is not just another true crime podcast, but a necessary tool for those who want to understand the dangers lurking in the real world. And as you guys might already know, we are now switching up the format for Residue. We're niching down. We are going to concentrate on movies, made-for-TV movies or theatrical releases that were inspired by true crimes. And then I will tell you the true story behind that film. You know that Residue is created, hosted, written, researched, edited, and produced by me, Chrissy Champagne. I'm doing it all by myself here, guys, so thank you so much for joining me. You can also join me on Instagram at Residue Podcast, Facebook, Residue A True Crime Podcast, or TikTok at Residue Podcast. And as I always say, the best thing you could possibly do for any podcast that you love is leave a 5-star review. Residue, big news. Residue has joined forces with the network Black Cat. I'm so excited. So Black Cat is a network that was created by Ashley and Ricky of the podcast that I adore, Crime Salad. If you have never listened to Crime Salad, I'm going to need you to go on over there when you finish this episode. And I just wanted to share that with my crew over here because I have been walking on air with this news. Thank you so much for being here today. Today we're going to talk about a very popular movie. I know we usually tend to go back in time with these movies, but we're going to talk about a 2024 made-for-television film starring Lisa Rinna. And I know some people got their opinions about Lisa Rinna, but I love me some Lisa Rinna. So I was so excited to find out that there was this Lifetime movie that I didn't know about, which is crazy to me. So, Mommy Meanest came out before the Netflix documentary Unknown Number, The High School Catfish. And if you have not watched that Unknown Number documentary, I don't know what you're doing. Seriously, go directly to your Netflix account and turn that documentary on when you finish listening to me. And even if you figure out who the big catfish is, or if you already know, because I'm sure almost everyone in the world already knows, you're still going to be shocked. I mean, it's appalling to watch that. And I thought, you know what, let's get this one right on the list of movies we've got to talk about. I know I'm a little behind the trend here on talking about The High School Catfish, but deal with it. We're about to get started, but you know I gotta sing first. And I thought in honor of joining Black Cat, we're gonna sing some Janet Jackson, because the second that I learned I'm gonna be a part of this network, I have been walking around my house just being like, Black Cat, Nana's on and brown. Better watch a step or you're gonna die. Now, I don't know all the words, so I just like walk around like pretending like I'm like dancing like Janet Jackson circa like Rhythm Nation, the If video. Okay. Don't forget to follow Residue on whatever platform you are listening to your podcast and get ready to rage out with me. This is the story of Kendra Licari and the Lifetime movie Mommy Meanest. Mommy Meanest is a Lifetime original thriller that was released in 2024. It's about an hour and a half long. It's directed by Greg Beeman, and it is executive produced by Lisa Rinna. Now, this stars Lisa Rinna as Madeline. She is the mother of Mia, who is played by Brianna Skye. And there is also another guest star in this film. It is Delilah Bell Hamlin, who you may know as Lisa Rinna's real-life daughter. I just feel like Delilah is going to take over the Lifetime movie queen role that Lisa Rinna has played in a couple of movies. So while watching Mommy Meanest, I kept thinking, you know what? I feel like Lisa Rinna is passing the reins to Delilah for, you know, the next new queen of Lifetime. And I'm down with it because she was pretty good in this movie. So I don't generally do it this way, but we're going to talk more about Mommy Meanest after I tell you the true story of Kendra and Lauren Licari, because Mommy Meanest doesn't really keep the story straight. It's not the same exact story, and I'll explain to you why at the end of this episode. But now we should start talking about the unknown number, the high school catfish. Sean and Kendra Licari welcomed their baby daughter, Lauren, in 2007. And initially, Sean and Kendra's marriage was pretty strong, and everyone around them thought they had the perfect little family. So these two met while Kendra was studying at Central Michigan University. And when she finished her studies, she moved to Sean's tight-knit hometown community, Beale City, Michigan. Beale City is the kind of place where people are born and they grow up there and they create their families there. It is a very small community. I was reading some Reddit threads. People were asking, you know, what's Beale City like? And a lot of people said, I didn't even really know that it existed until they saw the story about Kendra Licari. So to give you an example, the town is so small that there's only one school, and this school houses kindergarten through 12th grade. That sounds crazy to some people because you think about like a kindergartner being in school with a 12th grader, but I gotta tell you, my husband actually grew up in a town like this, and I think it's just so adorable and so quaint, and the stories that he tells about how he had this very tight-knit friend group from such a young age and throughout the grades, and it would be like 8 kids in his class. His entire class, like his entire 7th grade class, is just 8 kids. So you better be getting along with these kids. It sort of reminds me of a TV show that like the WB would make. Wait, do I mean the CW? Yeah, I mean the CW. So this school in Beale City had, I believe, about 70 kids per class. So it was a little bigger of a population. But it's the same deal. If you're going to be in this small town community, hopefully you're getting along with all of your peers, all of your neighbors. So when they moved as a young family to Beale City, Sean wasn't really into the, you know, tight-knit crowd. He wasn't in the in crowd. And so Kendra, being new to the town, she decided the best thing to do for her daughter was to just push her front and center and, you know, make her join all the sports, all of the teams that she can, kind of just like embed her into the community. And Lauren grew up to be a fantastic athlete. She thrived in many sports. She played basketball, and Kendra, her mother, was even a coach for the basketball team. And sometimes she would be a voluntary scorekeeper. So things seemed to be going great for the Licari family. Sean was working as a mechanic, and Kendra was working in IT, and Lauren was just head over heels in love with the first love of her life, Owen. So Lauren is dating Owen McKenney, and these two have known each other since they were little, and around 12 or 13, they're dating. And Owen's parents, Jill and Dave, they become really close friends with Kendra and Sean, Lauren's parents. These two families are always together. And in high school, Owen and Lauren are known as the golden couple. So I don't know if that was always a good thing for them, because most people thought, oh my God, they're so cute. They're so adorable. They're the golden couple. But then you would have, you know, some other students, some other girls, some friends who are like, oh my God, the golden couple. You get my drift. Okay, there's a popular group of girls. They are Sophie, Chloe, and Macy. And Sophie, Chloe, and Macy are really great friends with Owen. But these three girls do not dig Lauren's vibe at all. As Sophie put it, you know, Lauren just always wanted to talk about sports, and we didn't really get along so well. I mean, I guess the girls just felt that Lauren was pretty quiet and distant, and she was kind of in her own world with Owen. And now you gotta remember that this is a small town, parents talk, people gossip, there is a rumor mill, and we're gonna go to October 2020. Now, this is when everything just turns to shit. So in October of 2020, there is this huge Halloween party at Chloe's house. Chloe is one of the girls who is best friends with Owen. Now, Chloe's family throws this party every single year. Huge party in town. Everyone's invited. Everyone except Lauren. So they don't invite Lauren to this party, but Owen invites Lauren to this party. Obviously, Lauren doesn't even really want to go. I mean, come on. How embarrassing is that if you're inviting the entire town and you're not going to invite one of your best friend's girlfriends? So it is 2 weeks before this big Halloween party. There's tension in the air. And all of a sudden, Lauren and Owen get a group text from an unknown number. And it says,
Owen is breaking up with you. He doesn't like you. It's obvious he wants me. We are both DTF.
Okay, when I first watched this documentary, and this is the first text that you see pop up, and the minute I saw DTF, and I know everyone probably knows what DTF means, but it's a Jersey Shore saying, and it means down to fuck. So the minute I saw that, and this is taking place in 2020, I was like, dude, this is an adult who's sending these messages. But I couldn't figure out which adult, I'll be totally honest with you. I was like, what 12-year-old in 2020 is saying DTF? Another text also says, sorry, not sorry. No children say those phrases. So there's just two messages at this point, and they can't figure out who did it. They're asking, like, did you send this? And Owen even wants to ask Chloe, like, did you send this to us? But they never find out, and it just kind of gets pushed under the rug. No more messages come through, and things seem to be pretty okay for about 11 months until the messages start back up. A new school year has begun, and Lauren and Owen start getting the messages again.
How's the happy couple? Owen loves me, and I will always be the girl that he loves.
So obviously, these two are trying everything they can. They're texting back, they're calling back, they're trying to call to get someone on the phone, but nobody ever answers this phone. And soon, the text messages start referring to Lauren as Lo, and that is a private nickname that only people close to her know. So now they have a clue.
You are worthless. You fucked up his life so bad, and his family hates you for it.
I mean, it doesn't stop. It's nonstop. Sometimes it's 30, 40, 50 texts a day. And sometimes these texts are referring to certain things that Lauren's wearing or certain things that happened in school that day. So Owen shows these texts to his friend group, Macy, Chloe, and Sophie. He shows it to them, and they are all trying to figure out, where's this coming from? And they're thinking, you know what? Whoever it is knows certain things that we're saying. So the three of them plus Owen decide to start saying certain things around random people. And if these things show up in the text messages, it's got to be this person or this group of people. And Chloe, Macy, and Sophie are actually suspecting Lauren. They are thinking, Lauren must be sending these texts to create this, like, closeness with Owen. These texts are getting worse. They're getting very sexual, very graphic. I was gonna read some of them to you, but I can't bring myself to do it. These were texts that were being sent to 12-year-old children. They are talking about sex. BJs is mentioned a lot. Fingers, you just take it from there. But these are all being sent to Lauren and Owen, specifically telling Lauren that Owen wants to do all of these sexual things with whoever this unknown number is. So the four parents sit down with the school, and they are starting to realize that some of these messages happened during school hours. So the superintendent and the principal, they get together with the parents and they start saying, you know, maybe we could set up some system where Lauren sends us a screenshot of a text right when she gets it, and we'll watch the surveillance cameras and see who's sending text at that moment. I mean, they talk about this in the documentary, but to me, that sounds pretty difficult to do. I don't know. And obviously, the school is like, just take your kids' phones away. What are you doing, you know? I mean, that was my question too. And Owen's parents did actually end up taking his phone from him every single night, because he was getting 30, 40, 50 texts a day. And they were like, at night, give us your phone. Which, I mean, he's a 13-year-old kid at this point. He just wanted to have his phone. He finally got one. And now that little, you know, piece of freedom is being taken away from him. So when the four parents sit down with the school superintendent even says, listen, I am a grown-ass man, and I read these texts, and they made me blush, because these texts are disgusting. Some new texts start coming in, and these are, you know, degrading Lauren, degrading the way that she dresses, you know, body shaming her.
We staying at a hotel with him Thursday, and your sorry ass won't be there. He wants sex, BJs, and making out.
I mean, obviously, this is a lot for a 13-year-old to handle. Lauren is starting to suspect, like, Owen, are you doing something with someone? What is going on? And the couple just starts to dissolve. They can't handle it anymore. And Owen actually feels like, you know what? Maybe if we break up, this will stop. That will solve everything. And maybe one day down the road, we can try this again, but we have to figure out how to end this now. So they break up. And the messages get worse. Like, they're going at Owen and Lauren 10 times harder now. And this time, they are saying things that are just unbelievable to me. These messages are telling them to end their lives. You know, telling Lauren that Owen's life would be better if she were dead. And Lauren hits the lowest point of her life. She can't handle it. She has no idea how to handle this situation. Someone is telling her to end her life. 13 years old, she's getting nonstop messages like, you're the worst. You should quit, get her, and be done. Now, this text makes Lauren think, wait a minute, what do you mean get her? They are watching her games, her basketball games. So now Lauren knows, okay, I can kind of narrow this down if I really think. So more texts keep coming in, and these texts know specific details about this one basketball game. They know how many points Lauren scored, how many points other people on the team scored, and they mention a specific point, like 13 points. And so Lauren's mom is the voluntary scorekeeper. So she goes through the list and she looks and she's like, oh, guess who scored 13 points this game? Chloe, Owen's best friend. Now, to everyone, oh, okay, yeah, Chloe looks like the perfect suspect. The thing is, though, and Chloe's friends even say this during a short interview with the sheriff at the school, you know, Chloe's dad is a police officer. Chloe would be smarter than this. Chloe's not going to text someone, I scored 13 points today and you didn't. It's like, you know, that's a little too obvious, you guys. But they all say Chloe and Owen were always best friends, even before he met Lauren, and they kind of even liked each other a little bit. Chloe had a huge crush on Owen, but Lauren came into the picture, and that is when Chloe starts being mean to Lauren. I mean, they're even on the same basketball team together, but they don't hang out, they don't get along. So Chloe's looking like suspect number one here. And here's the other thing. A lot of the texts that are coming through refer to a group of people. They say things like, finish yourself or we will. There's one that says, "We will make every day fucking miserable for you." And Chloe had a little trio at school. She had Macy and Sophie. So to police, this looks like, oh, okay, obviously it's her. And it didn't help that Chloe's family goes on vacation to Florida. And the minute that family hits the state lines of Florida, texts are coming through to Lauren's phone, to Owen's phone, from a Florida area code. So Chloe's getting blamed for this, and Chloe's dad is like, you know what? Screw this. We're going to just take your phone and we're going to do a forensic download. It's called a dumping. And Chloe agrees. She's like, let's do it, because I am definitely not sending these messages. So Chloe gets her phone dumped, and they still keep receiving messages. Everybody keeps receiving them. Even after Chloe gets her phone dumped, Lauren and Owen are receiving messages like they're from Chloe. So whoever is doing this is still trying to push the narrative that Chloe is the unknown number. So it's Christmas Day, and Owen receives as a gift a sweatshirt and a phone case. And somebody takes a picture of this sweatshirt and phone case sitting on a couch next to Owen. It's just a strange picture. Seems like an out of place picture to take at a Christmas Day party. But they send this picture to Lauren and Owen, and police are like, who could have sent this? This has to be somebody who was at this party. And this was a very private, family, close friend party. So who was at the party? And all anyone can come up with was Owen's cousin, Adriana. Adriana was quiet. She had a quiet group of friends. She says that Macy, Chloe, and Sophie always bullied her. And there was a time that Adriana accused the three girls of throwing carrots at her in the lunchroom, and they got blamed, and Chloe was getting blamed for a lot of bullying at this point. And so the police start to think, well, maybe Adriana's getting revenge on these three girls for bullying her, and that's who's setting them up. So Adriana is brought in for questioning. This poor child. I was so sad watching her on the documentary, because she seems like the absolute sweetest girl. And she says that she was on the volleyball team with the three girls. They were not nice to her. And it just became this big issue in the town, because Adriana's blaming Chloe for bullying her. And Chloe and Sophie and Macy are saying they didn't bully her. So to the police, this looks like, okay, we've got our situation here. We know who could possibly be doing this. But Adriana starts getting some messages from an unknown number.
Hey, Adriana. Oh, we need your help. We need to get low, gone away from him.
I mean, when is this even going to end? This has been going on for 2 years. And during this entire time, Lauren's family is going through horrific financial struggles. They have moved 4 times while this whole thing is going on. They are struggling. They're also worried about their daughter's mental health. I mean, Lauren is not okay. These messages are nonstop. These messages are calling 13-year-old Lauren a nasty slut. She should end her life. She's never going to be good enough for someone like Owen. She sucks at sports. They're taking pictures of her off of social media, pictures of her and Owen together back when they were dating. They're like erasing her face off of the picture, writing like stupid whore on the pictures and sending them to Lauren. And this whole time, this is still happening to Owen. I feel like we forget the fact that Owen is also 13 and he is dealing with these very sexualized, horrid text. So Owen's getting texts like, bruh, Owen, you a fucking scared little pussy. And Owen is just a mess. At this point, Owen has started dating a new girl. Now, she lives in another town, but he's dating this girl. It's a very, very new relationship. And this girl starts receiving messages. I mean, obviously she's like, yo, guy, what's going on here? I don't want to deal with this. I just met you. Not only that, this girl's mother is receiving messages. And at this point, this girl and her mother are like, we're shutting this down. Sorry, Owen. you're a nice dude, but we gotta bounce from this situation. So finally, the sheriff is just like at his wit's end. So he finally decides, you know what, let's get the FBI involved in this, the cyber crimes unit. And Bradley Peter from the FBI cyber crimes unit shows up to town and takes over. So he starts looking at the phone number that is sending all of these messages. And he finds out that one phone number came from an app called Pinger. And this is an app used to disguise phone numbers. In his reports, he finds these two IP addresses that belong to a certain Verizon network. So they have to submit a search warrant to Verizon. And then the FBI gets a phone number that is attached to those two IP addresses. So the FBI figures it out very quickly. And they call Jill, Owen's mom, and they say, listen, give me all of the phone numbers of all of your friends, your families. We have a phone number and we want to match it. So she goes to Owen and she's like, Owen, give me all of your friends' phone numbers. And that's where they start. So Owen's submitting all of his friends' phone numbers and they're not finding any matches. And then Jill's like, well, let's submit just like our friends, even our adult friends. And so she starts giving the FBI agent all of her friends' phone numbers. And that is when one phone number matches. And that is right. You guessed it. You know it. That phone number belongs to Kendra Licari, Lauren's own mother. Terrorized her and her friends for 2 years. She spent 2 years telling her own daughter to kill herself, telling her own daughter she wasn't worth enough. She was anorexic. She was bad at sports. She has no friends. No one will ever love her. She should end it all now. She watched her baby girl cry herself to sleep every night. She watched her daughter struggle just to get up and get out the door and go to school. She watched her daughter just fall into a pit of despair, and she didn't give a shit. She just kept pushing on and pushing on. More texts, more texts. And not only her daughter, she's sending these to a 13-year-old boy. These sexualized texts, these disgusting things that an adult man said he couldn't even read and made him blush. And this 13-year-old boy, he tries to move on with his life and it gets shattered because Kendra is now texting his new girlfriend's mother. Why? Police go to Kendra's house, they have a search warrant, and she's just like, what are you here for? And they're like, Kendra, we got to talk to you. They bring her into the house. She's acting all innocent. And she really admits it, but not really admits it. I mean, you know, she breaks down pretty quickly. So they just say to her, Kendra, look, everything that we've found, it's all leading back to you. And Kendra's like, what do you mean? She's trying to look all like, what do you mean? And the cop is like, it's you, Kendra. We know it's you. And she goes, no, like, it's my number. And the cop is just like, does this have to do with Owen? Do you have an infatuation with Owen? And that's when Kendra goes, no, no, nothing like that. So they have this surveillance footage on the Netflix documentary that you just have to see, because this situation, the way that Kendra's behaving, it's really creepy. I mean, right away, Kendra's like, well, listen, I didn't do those first messages. I didn't do the ones that came around October 2020 for the Halloween party. But I really wanted to know who was doing the messages. So I decided that maybe I should start texting some messages, you know, and then maybe the kids will start to talk and they'll start to figure it out on their own. And you watch someone like her say this straight to a police officer, straight to a camera crew during a documentary filming. And you're like, do you really believe your own lies, don't you? It's like Kendra just thinks everyone is so stupid and she can get away with anything, because you honestly think that we are so dumb that when you tell us something like, let me tell you what she says in the documentary. She says, you know, I know, I did this. But come on, you guys all did stuff wrong in your lives too. I mean, some people get arrested for DWI. You know, some people drink a lot. And she's equating that to the fact that she tortured her own daughter for 2 years. And she thinks it's okay because we all, listen, we all make mistakes. And police want to tell Lauren what's going on, but they want to talk to her without Kendra there. But Kendra insists she wants to sit there. So they tell Lauren, you know, it's your mom that's been doing this, like right with Kendra in front of her. And Kendra just starts hugging Lauren in this awkward way, like, I'm so, baby, I'm so sorry. It was me. Come on. Don't get mad. Let's have cookies later and watch Gilmore Girls. I mean, honestly, it's some really pretty sad and depressing footage. And I know people are making light of it and making jokes about Kendra, but to watch Lauren's reaction, and especially as a mother, I just, it breaks my heart. That poor girl. Kendra's husband, Sean, and they get him home as quick as possible. Sean comes rushing home. He's like, what's going on? They tell him he's just dumbfounded. I mean, that man wants to rage out, but he's keeping his cool. He says to the police, did you get her other phone? And they were like, what do you mean? He goes, oh no, she has more than one phone. So they go in and they ask Kendra for her phone. She's like, well, I don't know. I don't have a phone. I just feel like she's gotten through her whole life by acting like a dumb asshole. And they're like, nah, you got the phone. Do you want us to start tearing this place apart? Or are you going to just hand us the phone? And she's like, okay, it's out by the pool or whatever, wherever it was. And they go outside and they get the phone. And, you know, her husband is like, get out of my house. And she's like, no, I don't want to leave my daughter. He's like, you will be leaving your daughter right now. Call your parents. Get the hell away from us right now. Oh, and if police wanted to make her husband, Sean, even more upset, well, they were about to do it because they told him, your wife hasn't had a job for over a year. Now, he knew she lost a job, but he didn't know that she wasn't going to work for over a year. He's just like, cool, we're done, lady. So Kendra is arrested. I mean, the whole town is losing their damn minds. They're like, what? And while Lauren is awaiting her sentencing, Lauren's writing letters to the judge and begging for her mom to come home. Like, Lauren wasn't mad at her mother. She wanted to be with her mother. She needed her in her life. So Kendra pleads guilty to 2 counts of stalking a minor. So that's for Lauren and Owen. And at her sentencing, the entire room is filled with the people in town. Chloe's there, Jill's there, Owen's there, and Kendra was allowed to speak, and she gave a lot of apologies the way that she does. They're kind of bullshit. She gave a lot of excuses. She talked about her childhood, and, you know, she had a rough past. She has trauma, and you know what? That is sad. That sucks for Kendra, that she had a lot of these really horrible things happen to her as a child, as a teenager. And she claims that, you know, she's just trying to protect Lauren from the world by sending her these texts that say things like, you have no friends, you should kill yourself, you have an anorexic ass. You know, that was just to protect Lauren. And it was because, you know, she's had trauma in her life. It just doesn't make any sense. And I'll just mention this about the documentary because this part really pissed me off. You're watching it and you're wondering, what the fuck? Why did this lady do this? Why did this lady agree to do this documentary? That's the strangest thing to me. But they ask her, like, you know, why did you do this? You know, the question on everyone's mind. And she pauses, and the producer, who I believe is the producer, just goes, did you do this because maybe you feel those ways about yourself? Like, do you think you're anorexic? Do you think you're a bad person? And, you know, you can see it should win an Emmy, this little facial expression that Kendra makes. She just kind of like twitches her face and goes, you know what? Well, that's the ticket. Oh, that's what I was doing. I was thinking I was sending these texts to myself. Like, why'd you give her an out? It's just like, oh, that enraged me as much as Kendra being the person that was doing this. Kendra is sentenced to 19 months in jail. And while she's in jail, she's allowed to still correspond with Lauren. Like, Lauren can't see her, but they can talk back and forth through email. And even the emails that they were sharing, like, Kendra is still a little creepy. Like, here's one. She goes, "Hello, curly monkey head. I'm mad at you. You made me sad. You only said bye. You didn't say I love you. I forgive you, sad face. XOXOXO, I love you. Have a fantastic day." Something like that. I don't know. She writes like, that's a combination of fantastic, awesome, and terrific. Now, when I see an email like that as a middle-aged woman, I'm not going to give my full age away here, but I'm like, damn, she is still manipulating that girl from jail. Like, I'm mad at you. You only said bye. You didn't say I love you. Don't talk to her like that. But Lauren is still so young. She doesn't, I mean, I just kept thinking, man, I cannot wait until Lauren gets out of that town. She goes to college. She finds a group of people where she can just be herself. And she starts experiencing the world and other people. And she realizes that what her mother does to her is not right. It is not okay. So Jill and Owen, in the documentary, they do discuss the fact that Kendra was very strange around Owen and that she would even go to his sporting events when he was broken up with Lauren and they weren't even talking anymore. Kendra would still show up to his games. She would ask the family if she could come to the games. And Owen even said that Kendra made him feel really uncomfortable, that she would do weird things like cut his steak up for him while they were having dinner. He said that it never felt like she was my girlfriend's mom. It felt like she liked me. So a lot of viewers started noticing that, you know, maybe Kendra had an infatuation with Owen, just like the police officer asked her. And she said, no. But there was an article published in Elle, and they noted that there was a small detail in the documentary that a lot of viewers did notice. So this is after Lauren and Owen break up. Owen moved to a new town, and this is why he met a new girlfriend. So this new girlfriend that we talked about and her mother, who started receiving all of these messages to back off of Owen and that Owen is ours, is what some of the messages used to say. So if Kendra's going to say that the only reason she did this was to save Lauren, to help Lauren, and also to figure out who sent the first two messages, which is completely absurd, if that is what she's going to say is the reason that she did this, then why did she start going after Owen's new girlfriend and his mother? Why did she care anymore about Owen? Kendra targeted Owen's new girlfriend a full year after he and Lauren were already broken up. And there was a popular Reddit thread discussing this detail, with one writer saying that this single detail proves this had absolutely nothing to do with protecting her daughter and everything to do with her own predatory obsession with Owen. So Kendra is out of prison and everyone wants to know, where is she now? In January of 2025, The Cut published a feature about this case. And at that time, they said it was unclear if Kendra was employed. They did know that she was living with a family near Detroit, Michigan. And then the other question on everyone's mind, why did Kendra participate in this documentary? They say it was a last minute decision on Kendra's end. They said that it was a really long process with Kendra to get her to do this, and she ultimately agreed to speak about questions surrounding the case. And they said that that was appealing to her to sit down and tell her story from her perspective, and that Lauren could see that she sat down and she took responsibility for this. Lauren said, "I think I want to trust my mom now, but I don't think I can. Now that she's out, I just want her to get the help that she needs so when we do see each other, it doesn't go back to the old ways and how it was before." I just feel for Lauren, and this is one of those stories that you can't wrap your brain around. Like, literally unbelievable. So let's talk about some of the differences in the Lifetime movie, Mommy Meanest. So in the movie, Lisa Rinna plays the character of Madeline, who is Kendra. So Madeline and her husband, Eric, are divorced. They start off right away with that. Also, her daughter is named Mia. That is the character of Lauren. And Mia has been bullied her whole life through school. And now her mother, Madeline, gets this job in this really fancy, upscale private school as a music teacher. And that means that Mia gets to go to school for free, but they're not a rich family. So Mia gets picked on a lot. And it's sort of like what happened to Adriana in real life. Adriana being Owen's cousin, who said that Chloe and Macy and Sophie were always picking on her. So in Mommy Meanest, Mia's getting picked on. Lauren. It's a lot of names I'm throwing at you here. So she's getting picked on, but she turns her story into this like achievement. She's a kid that was bullied, but in the movie, kids throw pennies at her. In the documentary Unknown Number, they were throwing carrots at Adriana. So they're throwing pennies at Mia, but the whole thing is that Mia saved every one of these pennies and she created a fund to rescue animals. So now Mia is going to go away to college. It's almost the end of the school year and her mother's freaking out. And her mother starts to realize my daughter's moving on without me and I'm never going to see her again. So she finds out that there's this app where you can change your phone number and you can start sending people messages. And so in the movie Mommy Meanest, she starts sending her daughter horrific messages on the same level as the ones that Kendra was sending Lauren. One of the big differences from the true story and the movie is that in the movie, the character of Mia really fights back. She learns that her mom is doing this and she gets the police involved and she sets her mom up and she sends her own mother to jail. She's not taking this at all. And they really push that in the end, the character of Kendra is left by herself. And even in the end, knowing what she did, she doesn't care. She's still making excuses as the movie ends. And I'm convinced that this is how it's going to be for Kendra in real life. Stay safe and stay parent.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.